All right, good morning to everyone. We read the Sedra of Shlach Lecha and the Parshas HaMeraglim, the very faithful and tragic episode of the spies. So Rashi starts by asking, Lama Nismecha Parshas Meraglim or Parshas Miriam? Why is the episode of Meraglim juxtaposed to the episode of Miriam's punishment for the Lashon Hara she spoke against Moshe? So Rashi says, Lefisha Lokcha Al Iske Diba, She was afflicted because of the Lashon Hara, the slander she addressed concerning her brother Moshe. So she was punished for Lashon Hara. Gurashom halalu ro'u v'lalakhu musar. And these evil people, the Meraglim, they heard, in other words, they knew what happened to Miriam, v'lalakhu musar, and they didn't learn any lesson from it. And they spoke Lashon Hara as well. Of course, the immediate question we have to ask is, against whom did the Meraglim speak Lashon Hara? Right? We know, lo shelach racha b'amecha, a person can't speak Lashon Hara about people. Against whom did the Meraglim speak Lashon Hara? About the land. Where do we see that also? This land is inanimate. So in fact, you see from this Rashi that it is forbidden to speak Lashon Hara against Eretz Yisrael. In fact, Meraglim are defined as Motzi'ei Dibas Ha'aretz Ra'ah. They're the ones who spoke Lashon Hara against Eretz Yisrael, and for that they were punished. Now, we have to understand why that is and what was their fate, and I want to take up a specific aspect of Eretz Yisrael in a few moments, but against the land, against Eretz Yisrael, against the people, that would be Lashon Hara against people. Lashon Hara against the people, right. Don't ask them about the government, though. Right. But clearly against the land, he can't speak Lashon Hara, and against the residents of Eretz Yisrael, he can't speak Lashon Hara. All right, we'll leave it at that for now. The government will release another year. Medrash says in the Yalkut Shimoni on Chavakuk, that we read this pasuk on the second day of Shavuos in the Haftarah. Rabbi said, Omad vayimodeid eretz, that God stood, so to speak, vayimodeid eretz, and measured out the land. And the Medrash continues, Madara kadosh baruch hu kol haaretzos, God measured out all the lands of the world, v'lomotza eretz, sheru'uya l'hinosin l'Yisrael, ela eretz Yisrael. And he did not find the land more appropriate for the people of Israel than the land of Israel. Omad vayimodeid eretz. The land is suited to the people. The land is suited to the people, as Rashi indicates, the very first Rashi in the Torah, on Bereishis Bara Elokim, that this is our response to the nations of the world who say to us, that say to us until today, that God is not in the real estate business. Matam posach b'Bereishis, mishum koach masav higili amo, losis l'nachas goyim. That Bereishis teaches us of God's might, his mastery and domination of the universe. Shem yomer umo sa'olam li'yisra listim atem, shekivashtem arzo shiva goyim. If the nations of the world say to us, as they do, you thieves, you stole the land of the seven nations. Omrim lahem, we say to them, kol oretz hakadosh baruch hu hi, all earth belongs to God. Huvra'o, he created it, unisana lasher yashrabeino, then he gave it to the one who is most fit in his eyes. Biritzano nitna lohem, it was God's will to give it to them, to the nations of Canaan. Uvirtzano nitlo mehem, benitna lonu, and it was his will also to take it from them, give it to us. So that is omad vayimodeid eretz, not only in terms of who is the ultimate sovereign over the land, but generally, God chose this specific piece of territory for the Jewish people. And the Medrash says also, you hear Bamidbar Rabbah, Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu LeMoshe, God said to Moshe, Ha'aretz Chaviva Olai, this land is very precious to me, the Yisrael Chavivim Olai, and Israel is very precious to me. Achnis es Yisrael Shem Chavivim Olai, Lo Eretz Chaviv Olai. I'm going to cause Israel, who is precious to me, to enter a land that is precious to me. bring the beloved to the beloved. And that's the connection between the Jewish people and the land of Israel. The land that's designated for the Jewish people. So if we speak about why is there such an isser as saying Lashon Hara against the land of Israel, now we understand. Because it's even worse than speaking Lashon Hara about another Jew. He's speaking Lashon Hara about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who set aside this land for us. So it's also to disparage the land of Israel, and conversely, it's a mitzvah to praise the land of Israel. Now what's the classic praise of the land of Israel that we find in the Torah? It's on everyone's tongue. Eretz Yisrael is described 15 times in the Torah as Eretz Zavat Chalav Udvash, as a land flowing with milk and honey. Now this occurs several times in our Seder as well. So in Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Chav Zayin, the Meraglim return, and they say the very first thing they tell the people, Vayisapru lo, Vayomru, Bonu el Oretz Asher Shlachtonu, we went to the land to which you sent us. V'gam Zavas Chalav Udvashi, it's also a land flowing with milk and honey. The Zepir Yo, and they brought some of the produce of the land, the clusters of grapes, that's the symbol of the Ministry of Tourism of Israel, to show the land's bounty. But Ephes, it's all worthless, ki az ha'om ha'yashay ba'aretz, etc., etc. It's all worthless because the people are too powerful, we can't conquer it. But in fact, that aspect of the land is true. You skip down a few psukim, so in Lamed Beis, v'yatziv dibas ha'aretz, they spoke Lashon Hara about the land that they had visited. Now, if you skip a few psukim to Perek Yudalid, Pasuk, Zion, Yeshua and Kalev answer the Meraglim, try to quiet the people in their nascent rebellion. Vayamru Kaladas b'nei Yisrael le'mor, ha'aretz asher avarnu vo l'asurasa, tova ha'aretz ma'od ma'od. The land that we traversed in order to investigate its character, a very, very good land. Tovarz ma'od ma'od, very, very good. And im chafetz bano Hashem, if God desires, ve'vio sonu el aretz hazos, unasana lanu, and he brings us to this land and he gives it to us, eretz asher hi zavas chalav udvash, a land which is flowing with milk and honey. Ach b'Hashem al timrodu. So in fact, both the Meraglim and Kolev and Yeshua make reference to this very same point, that Eretz Yisrael is Eretz Zavas Cholov Udvash. The difference in the two, of course, is that you see, just to note the words, because this was the intention, in Pasuk Chav Zayin, in the Meraglim's report, they said they came to the land, V'gam Zavas Cholov. It's also. Also meaning that is true, but it has other dimensions that are, unfortunately, unfavorable. That, and therefore the fact that the land is Zavas Cholav Udvash is not a deal maker, because right, no, it's an important characteristic, but it's not a deal maker, because it may have milk and honey, but you can't live there, so what's the point? Whereas the way Kalev and Yeshua described it, it's Eretz not Zavas Cholav Udvash, but Asher Hi Zavas Cholav Udvash, that really its essence, this is a land of flowing with milk and honey, and therefore it should be a deal sweetener, not a deal breaker, but a deal sweetener. That, you know, there may be difficulties in conquering and holding the land of Israel, but nonetheless, because it is Eretz Asher Hi Zavas Cholav Udvash, therefore it's worth any effort. So now we come to the question, what's the difference whether it's Zavas Cholav Udvash or not? All right. You know, old joke about Moshe wandering in the desert for 40 years and finding the only place in the Middle East without oil. It doesn't have any oil, so it has milk and honey. How valuable really is milk and honey? Sounds very nice. And I'm telling you, 15 times the Torah says such a thing, and many more times in the Vayim, and that's Shvach Haaretz. It's the land flowing with milk and honey. But what really does it mean? What's the virtue of having a land flowing with milk and honey? You can't drink oil. That's true, but you could sell oil for a whole lot of milk and honey. So what's the virtue? What does it really mean, by the way? How much can you benefit? How much can you benefit from the flow of milk and from the flow of honey? All right? We'll see. Now let's understand something else. Where is this phrase first used? So I did a quick search in my head. I hope it's right. It was never used for the Avos. It's only the first time it appears in the Torah. I looked it up. The first time it appears in the Torah is in Shmos, when God appears to Moshe at the Sneh and implores Moshe to take the Jewish people out of Egypt. Hashem says, "Per Gimel Pasuk Ches, Vo'erei Latzilo Miyad Mitzrayim, I will go down, take them out of the land of Egypt, Ulaha'aloso Menorat Sahi, and to lift them from that land, El Eretz Tovo Rechavo, to a land which is good and expansive, El Eretz Zavas Cholov Udvash, to a land which is flowing with milk and honey." That's the description that God uses to Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, he introduced the topic by saying, Anochi Elokei Avicha Elokei Avraham Elokei Yitzchak V'Elokei Yaakov. Even more than that, at the end of Parshas Bo, in the Parsha of Vayoki V'Yacho, so this point is made explicitly. Vayoki V'Yacho, it's Perek Gimel Pasuk Hey. Vayoki V'Yacho, Hashem El Eretz HaKanani V'Achiti V'Amari V'Achivi V'Ivasi. I'll bring you to the land of the Kananim and the other tribes. Asher Nishva La'Avosecha L'Sesloch, that I swore to your fathers, the Avos, that I would give to you, meaning their descendants, Eretz Zavas Cholav Udvash, a land flowing with milk and honey. What's the problem? God never told the Avos that he's giving them a land flowing with milk and honey. That phrase never appeared in the language of the covenant, of the bris, the brisos, between God and the Avos. Other dimensions. I'll give you the land, just taking an example. In Parshas Toldos, Hashem says to Yitzchak, don't go down to Egypt, Gur Bar Tzazos, you live in this land, Shchom Bar, Gur Bar Tzazos, Ve'yeh Imcho Vavrachako, Ki L'chol Zarecho, Atein Eskar Tzoso El, Vaki Mosi Esas Shavu, Asher Nishbat Vavram Avicho. Period. And you have a lot of descendants, etc. I'm not saying that Zavos Chol Vodash, nor to Avram, nor to Yaakov. So why did it suddenly appear when God speaks to Moshe and reiterated in the when people left Mitzrayim, I guess they left in the Parsha of Vayoki V'Yacho at the end of Parsha's bow, and really for the balance of the Torah, you always find this phrase mentioned. Thinking also that it's only here that Rashi defines what Zavas Cholav Udvash means in Perek Gimel Pasuk K, and not in Perek Gimel Pasuk. That's, I think it was. Well, Pasuk Hey, in Varei L'Hatil Mitzrayim. What is Zavas Cholav Udvash? The Rashi says, Cholav Zav Min Ha'izim, milk flows from the goats, V'advash Zav Min HaTamarim U'Min HaTeinim, and honey flows from dates and figs. That's the first thing. You shouldn't think our show is a land swarming with bees. We're not talking about bee honey. Dvash here means date honey or fig honey. That's what it means. Now, the Gemara Ksubos elaborates on this. Many places in the Shas where it's discussed, it's referred to, but it's not discussed widely. But in the Gemara Ksubos, it is. The Gemara says that Rami Bar Yecheskel saw these goats. I should have got a Gemara, but be that as it may. Rami Bar Yecheskel saw goats, a flock of goats, eating under a fig tree, and the abundance of the figs was so great that the honey was dripping from the figs and the milk was dripping from the goat's udders, and mixed with the honey, and Rami Bar Yecheskel said, Amar Hainu Zavas Cholav Udvash. That's what the Torah is referring to. That's the great promise of the Torah, that the land is flowing with milk and honey. And now the Gemara elaborates against Suvasaf Kufyud Aleph and Beis and Kufyud Beis and Aleph. Rabbi Yaakov walked from Lod to Ono. Both these cities still exist in roughly the same places, Kiryat Ono and Lod. A distance of about 3 mil, and he said he was ankle deep in fig honey. Zavas Cholav Udvash. Rish Lakish said the area around Tzipori in the Galil, that has roughly 90 and 16 mil by 16 mils, roughly 90 square miles of Zavas Chavavavash, and the utmost in fertility of the land. And the Gemara continues, a little way down, Kufyud Beis Amud Aleph. The Pasuk says in Yirmiyahu, V'etein loch eretz chemda nachalas tzvi. God promises that he'll give us eretz chemda, cherished land, a desirable land, nachalas tzvi, the inheritance of the deer. So the Gemara asks, Loma eretz Yisrael nimshal tzvi. Why is the land of Israel compared to a deer? And the Gemara answers, a few answers, we'll discuss one. What do? Loma lecha, ma tzvi zeh, ein aro machzik saro. Just like this deer, its skin doesn't hold its flesh, meaning once the carcass is flayed, it shrinks right away. Af eretz Yisrael, ein aro machzik saro. So too the land of Israel is so fickle that it does not hold on to its fruit. It has riboy peros. It's abundant in its fertility. And not only that, but it's Zavas Cholah Udvash. Zavas Cholah Udvash, Gemara explains, Shmeinim Echolov, rich in terms of its milk, and Misukim Udvash, and sweet in terms of its honey. Meaning the image that's given to us, the impression, is of a land of material bounty. Now, we may say we may not see it in our lives, although in certain cases we do, but apparently at the time of the Talmud it was so. Certainly at the time of Tanakh it was so. It's a very fertile land. Part of the mystique of Eretz Yisrael is that it's a very fertile land which is juxtaposed to very arid, infertile land. Right? Within an hour or so, you have lush, green pastures that are filled with produce and orchards and a variety of different species. And then, moments later, you're in the wilderness. That's the mystique of the land. You shouldn't think it's haphazard that it's done like this, but rather that's the intent of the Creator in giving us such a land of contrast. But the impression of Zavas Cholah Udvash is of material abundance. How so? That's what the Torah is referring to. It's a land that's so abundant that it produces an inordinate amount of figs and dates. And it's covered with figs and dates. And it has an enormous amount of pasture land. So flocks and flocks of cattle can graze on that land and consume those figs and dates. You need a land which is going to sustain agricultural growth and sustain also the development of animals. Right? You need pasture land, grazing land, and you need agricultural land. This land has so much, the excess is indicated by the fact that it's not even all consumed. Rather, the animals eat the figs, eat the dates, and the leftovers produce honey that just flows. And because the animals, therefore, are so robust, so vigorous, and so numerous, they produce an abundance of milk, and that's the image of Zavas Cholah Udvash. So why wasn't it said to the Avos? Because it didn't matter to them. It did not matter to them. And then we come really back into the parsha of real life and the Meraglim and the difference in the generations. To the Avos, it didn't matter what the land had. The special quality of the land was that as Baruch Hu said to them, Zara Fatain Asaratos. Period. That's all they needed to know. Not the fact they lived there also. But they lived there, each of them experienced a famine. Not as if the language of Zavas Cholah Udvash would even resonate with them. They would have accepted it as a prophecy for the future, but it didn't matter. You'll notice as well, the Avos didn't say, well, give us this land. Why don't you give us a land, where the rain falls a little more consistently, which is not prone to famines. Send us to France or to Italy. Send us to some place where we could... What's that? Right. I'm just saying, they promised... remember, they were promised this land. They were promised this land, and they embraced the promise. But they never thought to ask, why not give us a land which is not subject to famines? Because they all experienced famines, dire famines in the land of Israel. Well, it wasn't a concern to them. Their main attraction to the land was that Hashem had given it to them, and to their descendants, and that was it. To a nation of slaves, slaves by definition, materially deprived, so they had to have a different hook, something else that would attract them to the land least significantly. So therefore, material prosperity takes on a greater significance, hence the emphasis on Zavas Cholavudvash. This dimension was crucial to interesting them in the land of Israel. Otherwise, they would not be interested. So why are we going from a place where we have to suffer material deprivation to another place in which we have to suffer material deprivation? Why? They were complaining. And you see, they were an obstinate, obstreperous people in any event. You know, from the very beginning of God's relations with Moshe, in the very beginning of his mission, reiterated time and again in the Torah, the people were told they're coming to Eretz Zavas Cholav Udvash. And now we understand why it appeared only in Shmos and not earlier. Because it only made a difference to a nation of slaves. To the Avos, it did not make a difference to them at all. Now, this, in fact, was the promise that tempted Bnei Yisrael. So now we come to the Meraglim. The Meraglim said to them that indeed it is the Gam Zavas Cholav Udvash. It is a land flowing with milk and honey. There is a financial prosperity there. You'll do well. The Zephyr Yah, here's the proof. The people there do live well. In fact, they said they're strong, they're mighty, they're giants. Ephes. But nonetheless, it's not worth it. That material prosperity obviously comes at a price. You're sitting on a land of oil, so you want to have armies, today it's usually American armies, but you want to have armies defending that oil against invaders. No wonder they're very strong, because they live in Gan Eden. They live in a place of tremendous wealth and prosperity. So that's why they're very strong, and that's why they're fortified. And it's difficult to attack them. That's what the Meraglim said. That was their argument. Their argument addressed the people's primary concern. What did Kalei say? And Yeshua, Tovaritz Mod Mod, the land itself is very, very good. And more than that, Im Chofetz Bono Hashem, if God desires us, and He wants us to have the land, and He brings us to the land. The Unasana Lanu, He gives it to us. Eretz Asher Hizavas Cholav Udvash, a land which indeed is flowing with milk and honey, meaning that is the land, then we'll have it. But what's the key to possession of this land of material bounty? Ach Bashem Al Timrodu. The two things. Don't rebel against God. Vatem, and you, Al Tiru Asamaretz. Don't be afraid of the people living there. Yilachmenu Hein, they're our bread, meaning we'll have them for lunch. We'll eat them. We'll consume them very easily. Don't be afraid. Kalev and Yeshua introduce a different dimension to the land. But granted, the hook, the original hook, was Eretz Zavas Cholav Udvash, in a literal sense, but there's another aspect to the land as well. And that is, it's the land that God gave us. If it's the land that God gave us, then of course it's going to be a land of material bounty, but that's not why He's bringing us there. He's bringing us there for a completely different reason. And where else do we find the expression of Cholav Udvash? Interesting. I didn't see this in any of the Midrashim. Not that I say searched exhaustively, but there's another reference in Tanakh. It's in Shir HaShirim. Nofes Kitofna Sifsasayach Kala, that my bride, your lips will drip with the drippings of a honeycomb. Dvash v'cholav tachas l'shoneach. There's milk and honey underneath your tongue. Honey and milk underneath your tongue. What's dvash v'cholav? The Chazal say in all the Midrashim, it's Torah. Torah, every Torah. Divrei Torah sweet or honey. Then the fact is that there's a minig based on the very famous minig. The Medrash brings down already that some schools still observe. What's that? They use honey. You start teaching Chumash to a child, use honey. In fact, that's right, they put a little honey even on the Chumash and have the child, that's from the pasuk Dvash Bichalot Tachas L'Shonev. Therefore, it gives us a different insight in Eretz Yisrael. What's Erev Zavas Chalot Dvash? It's a land flowing with Torah. A land flowing with Torah is a different dimension to the land of Israel. Now, they're both true. The fact is, for the Hamon, they're drawn by a land of wealth. A land, well, the agriculture, kibbutzim, the orchards, oranges, diamonds, high tech, it's all wonderful. The sophisticates, Jews who understand, who are steeped in the Mesoros Avos, it's just something else. It's Torah. It's a land flowing with Torah. A land which is suited to the Torah. A land specifically chosen because it's suited to the Torah. That's why you have dozens and dozens of mitzvot hatluyos baretz, mitzvot that apply only in the land of Israel. Next is a Shemitah year. Classic example. The mitzvah applies only in the land of Israel. It's the only land in the world that has such a dimension to it. Certain mitzvot hatluyos baretz are dependent on the land, and other mitzvot are not. The chomos hosechem. And wherever you are, you have to kosher food, wherever you are in the world, you're not necessarily just in the land of Israel. But certain mitzvot, trumos, aishos, Mito, they're dependent on the land. Thus, Yeshua says, Ach Bashem Alkin Rodzu. The key to possessing the land of Israel is not that we'll have greater military prowess than the occupiers, than the enemy. That's not the key. The key is not to be Morid Bashem. If you were not Morid in Bashem, but rather we embrace the call of the Dvash of the land as it's intended, then we'll be successful. In other words, what's the secret to success in the land of Israel? It's embracing, it's accepting the call of the Dvash of Torah, and through that, the result of the call of the Dvash of everything else that comes. Because that, not as a reward, not as an end in itself, well, that's not the goal, but rather to facilitate our existence on the land. In other words, people like the Marcus Anius, poverty is not good for anyone. All rumors of the country notwithstanding. You know, there's nothing laudatory in Jewish life about being poor. Poor people can't, they don't have time to learn. They're just tired. They're bothered. They're overwhelmed by other concerns. So there's nothing glorious about Aeneas. So that would not be the land of Israel. It can't be, you know, Chad. Can't live in an arid land with any, it can't be Uganda. Right? Can't be Uganda. Couldn't have Torah in such a place. The people would be too affected by the need for material existence. But when we use the land in the proper way, and we're able to consume the milk and honey of Torah, the milk and honey, so to speak, of the rest of the land, that becomes ours as well. But that's a difficult concept to sell, especially today, although that is the very foundation of our possession of the land of Israel. Now, this point is made in a very subtle way towards the end of the Torah, at the beginning of Parshas Kisavo. The Torah says, beautiful pasuk, at the end of the Parshas Bikurim, Hashkifa imon kodshecha min hashamayim, it's Parakav Vav, pasuk Tes Vav. Hashkifa, we ask God to look down, Mimon Kodshecha Min Hashemayim, from your holy abode in heaven, Uvareches Amchos Yisrael, you'll bless your people Israel, Beis Hadam Asher Nasata Lanu, and the land that you gave us, Hasher Nishbat Alav Oseinu, as you promised to our fathers, Eretz Zavas Chalav Udvash, a land flowing with milk and honey. And the very next pasuk, Hayom Azeh, today, Hashem Elokecha Mitzavcho Lasos, this very day, God commands you to observe the statutes and the laws of the Torah. And the Sifsei Chachamim links the two. I'm sorry, it's not the Sifsei Chachamim, it's the Balaturim. The Balaturim says the two are linked. That what's, here's the remez, what's the zchus by which you'll be able to be zelka to the Eretz Chalav Udvash, That's the pasuk. Vayisem lahem arzos goyim. God gave us the lands of the nations. Bavur yishmer chukov yitzarosav yinsaro. On condition that, and for the purpose, that we will observe his statutes and guard his Torah. So that's the juxtaposition. This land, kashen ishbat ala vosenu eret zovas cholav udvash, but realize, hayom azeh, God is commanding you, las v'chukum eilav etzim mishpatim. And that, of course, makes Eretz Yisrael more unique than any other land in the world. That the possession of the land by its inhabitants depends on a moral dimension and not on a physical or military dimension. That's the essence of Eretz Yisrael. So what then was the rebellion of the Meraglim? Whatever reason we want to give for it, doesn't really matter. The essence of the Meraglim was a mered against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They rebelled against God. If they rebelled against God, not just against Jewish destiny, they rebelled against God. If they rebelled against God, then they lost the rights to Eretz Yisrael. They couldn't do it, because the premise on which Eretz Yisrael becomes ours is that we will embrace the Cholav Udvash aspect of Torah, and only then be Zocha to all the other brachos of the land of Israel. That's Zavas Cholav Udvash. I think there's a dual aspect to it. You know, in advertisement and in publicity, we only look at the physical dimension. And, you know, it's even common today, almost unthinkingly people say, it's Eretz Zavas Cholav Udvash. And we're so used to it, we don't even stop to think, well, why is it so important, really? You know, milk, you buy in a store, and honey, we only use it in Rosh Hashanah, so what really doesn't matter how much milk and honey it has. No, it's a deeper point. It's a reference first to the God, of course, set aside a land for us that is materially bountiful. Couldn't be any other way, but that's not the point of it. I almost realize the point. The whole point of Lazarucha Tainas Arthazos, that's the whole point of the land, that God is connected to the land. How is he connected to the land? In two ways. One, he set it aside for us, and he gave us a Torah that's uniquely suited for it. So therefore, it's only in loyalty, fidelity to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that our residence in the land is preserved. Without that, then it's going to be lost. And there's a very interesting dichotomy you find in two psukim in Shmos that I think emphasizes this and perhaps sheds a little light on one of our current predicaments. Again, going to the is now the parshas of Kadosiko Bechor. I'm sorry, yeah, Kadosiko Bechor. In Shmos, Perek Gimel, Pasuk Hey. The Torah says, this pasuk I quoted already. Right, this pasuk I quoted. It's further down. I'm sorry, next parsha, V'yakiv Yecho. Pasuk Yiralu. And now you'll be entering the land of Israel, the land of the Canaan that I swore to your father, to you and to your fathers. I'll give it to you. It's all part of Petah Rechem and Petah Hamor is introduced. Rashi says here in Pasuk Yud Aleph, the Heichan Nishbalacha, where did God promise? That's the promise he made in Va'era. We'll see in a second. Ve'vesi eschem el aretz, I'll bring you to the land. Asher nasasi es yadi, vosei sasach, l'Avraham yitzchak Yaakov. I'll bring you to the land that I lifted my hand to specifically give to your fathers. Avraham yitzchak Yaakov. Unesanoch loch, I'll give it to you. What does that mean? So Rashi says, Tehei be'inecho ki'ilu nitno lecho bo bayom. It should be in your eyes as if it was given to you that day. That day, v'alti beinecha kirushas avos, and you should not look at it as an inheritance from your fathers. Rather, you should look at it as matana that's given to you, not as kirushas avos. So, of course, the question is, what does it mean you shouldn't look at it as kirushas avos? Why not? That was kashenish balacha. That was all promise. In fact, that's what the Torah says. The whole point was to give it to them as a morasha, give it to them as an inheritance, because this was the promise of the avos. So now Hashem comes and says, "No, unesan Allah, it's given to you as matana. You should not look at it as Yerushas avos. Rather, you should look at it as a matana. What's wrong with seeing it as Yerushas Avos? Why did Hashem change his tune, so to speak, in a scant 7 parakim? First, it is Marasha, because I promised your fathers, and now it's not Marasha, it is Marasha, but don't look at it that way. Look at it as Unasan Aloch, as if it was given to you bo bayom. What's the difference? For Moshe Tzinerio, Zechatzadok Levracho, the founder of the B'nai Akiva movement, and B'nai Akiva Yeshiva, had a beautiful shot that I think is very worthwhile for us to just ponder and think about how it relates to us. He said the two statements were addressed to two different audiences. The first in Va'era was to an audience of slaves. It was Moshe Rabbeinu's. He was even before the Makos. People were enslaved. In fact, at that point, Moshe's original mission to Paro had failed miserably, abjectly, and the people were depressed. Moshe was depressed. So depressed when he brought them this news of the impending Geula, they didn't listen to him. They just, lo shamu Moshe, mikotrach me'avodah kasha. The slaves was promised the land of Israel as the richest of us. In Perek Gimel, they're already free. They're liberated. And now they're going to the land of Israel in order to conquer it and in order to make it theirs. So Neria said that's the difference. When they were slaves, so a slave, like any person who's downtrodden, needs encouragement. You have to give them a source of hope that something good is going to happen at the end that will perhaps make their suffering seem, if not worthwhile, at least meaningful, alright? So they were told, you're going to a land which is going to be yours, and yours forever, because it's Morasha, Ani Hashem. It's Yerushas Avos. It's an inheritance. They feel now they have nothing, but someday they'll have an inheritance, and that inheritance is guaranteed, and therefore they will be able to enjoy, and in fact be strengthened, be heartened by the promise that God made to them. Once they're free already, they're in a different position. And now they no longer need to be strengthened and emboldened in a time of suffering. Rather, to tell them it's Moreshes Avos, it's Yerushas Avos, will be akin to telling a 21-year-old, you have a large inheritance awaiting you in a short time. Alright? What's the typical reaction? Why should I work? Why should I study? I'll just wait till it comes my way. And of course, when it comes his way, he'll squander it because no appreciation involved. The slaves, they needed the encouragement of hearing it's the land that God promised to the Avos, and it's theirs because God promised it to the Avos. But to the generation which was now leaving, the same people, by the way, but different psychology. The generation that was now leaving Egypt and embarking to Eretz Yisrael, remember, they could have been there in a couple of months, not 40 years, but they should have been there in a shorter time. The second pasuk is teaching them it's a matana. It's a gift. It's a gift. Look at Eretz Yisrael as a gift that's given to you every day. All right? Gifts are lost also. It's entrusted to you. Trusts can be squandered. Trusts can be abused. Trusts that you don't appreciate, you've taken from you, given to someone else. So look at it as a matana, as given to you every day. Don't look at the land of Israel as a land which will always be yours, because it was the inheritance you received from your fathers. The fact is, it's true. Even when we're not in the land of Israel, even after we're exiled, it's still Moreshes Avos. It's still the land of our fathers, the land of our promise. On a metaphysical level, that promise always exists. But on a physical level, in the real world, and in real time, that promise has to be actualized, and in such a way that the people grasp it and make it theirs. Otherwise, it will be lost. That really is the lesson of Meraglim. Meraglim, like any group in Jewish history, I've said in the past, the beautiful shot I heard years ago from Rabbi Blech of Oceanside, that we learn out the number of a minion. from the Meraglim, really. 10. All takes 10 people to influence history. Negatively, like the Meraglim. Positively, Jews coming together to daven. All takes is 10. People can transform Jewish destiny for generations. The Meraglim cost us 2 generations of Jewish life. Hundreds of thousands of Jews died in the desert without being able to enter Eretz Yisrael and implement the Torah, simply because of these 10 people. And notice, by the way, I want to make this point before, when they said, when Ravim came back, and they also referenced Eretz Zavas Cholav Udvash, so you know, Chazal say they did it in order to give them credibility with the people. Yeah, Rashi says, Zavas Cholav Udvashi, Kol Dvar Sheker, Shinomer Bo Ktas Emes Betchiloso, Any scandisofo, any lie which doesn't contain a kernel of truth won't be accepted. It has to have a little truth in it to make it real. That, in fact, is the methodology of propagandists. If there's a little truth can conceal a big lie. So, in fact, they say, no, we'll tell you the truth. It is ours. They could have come back and said it's a bad land and it's the powerful people, so who needs it? People wouldn't believe them. So they said, no. Zavas Cholav Udvash. It's a very prosperous land. Very bountiful, fruitful land. Zepriyah, here's the fruit. So this, in fact, gives them credibility. And what they were saying is, just as you believe us in this aspect, believe us in the other aspect as well, that it's an invincible land. But Kolev and Yeshua made a different point. They said, Eretz Asher Higiz of Aschalav Udvash. Indeed, you see from them that it's Eretz of Aschalav Udvash. What does that mean? That's the promise that has sustained us now, for a year and a half. That we're going to this land flowing with milk and honey. As God guaranteed us a land flowing with milk and honey, He's also guaranteed us that we'll be able to enter the land of Israel. Therefore, Ach Bashem, Alfin Rodu. Therefore, don't rebel against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Any questions? Question? Yes. Yeah, it could be those particular substances, which of course are not really indigenous to Egypt, but they reflect. Milk and honey are not bounty per se. Milk and honey are a reflection of a bountiful land. Because only a land which has, like I said before, much pasture and much grazing and much agricultural land can produce the crops that could and support the grazing of a large flock and therefore create that flow of dvash and cholov. Yeah. Right. Well, I guess the lie was Az Ha'am. That's the lie. Right. That's the right. Right. Yeah. That's Ramban. That it was interpretation. That's correct. That's the original sin. That's true. Right.
But who said that this should go?
What's that?
So who sent them to go to investigate?
Right, that's the question. In Parshas Devarim, Moshe says, you talk me into it. He was against it. He didn't need it himself. He did not need it. But nonetheless, the people talked them into it, talked him into it, because he was afraid. His reasoning was, if they asked for it and he said no, then they would think that he's hiding something negative about the land. But Moshe makes it very clear in Parshas Devarim, that he thought it was a bad idea. Vatikravune lai kuchem, the old gang's up on me. Parak al pasuk hafez. Vatomru, you said to me, nishlachan hashim lefaneinu, send men to before us, v'achperlonu es ha'aretz. Alright, once you said it, v'itav beinai adavar. I agreed with it. It was good because it made sense. There was a benefit to it, the benefit in assuaging any fears or doubts that people might have. All right? If you look at chapter 1 of my book, you'll see, why did Yeshua send spies? If it could have been the same disastrous outcome as Moshe's spies. So 5 differences between Yeshua's spies and Moshe's spies. What's that? Okay, you can read the book or wait for the movie, whatever you want. Right. Okay. So that's what it was. So they're the ones who asked for it. Some of you were saying? Oh, they didn't lie. Right. In fact, that's the Dvar. Well, Dvar Sheker is not just Sheker. It tends to be a little deceitful, a little false. Because the context in which they were speaking was a false context. Especially since you could take the same facts and interpret them a different way. All right. One of the things Chazal say is that they saw people were dying. Eretz Ochel is Yeshveli. People were dying. So Rashi says they were dying. It was done, God did intentionally, so they should be able to spy the land without attracting suspicion. Everyone was busy burying a dead relative. All right. So they said everyone's dying. If they were righteous people, they said it's a bracha, that they weren't noticed. And there's another take on it also. They could have said, well, they're dying, so not just strong people. They're feeble people if they're subjected to traumatic influences or other illnesses that are decimating them. They did not derive that limu from what they saw. So, they went in with an agenda and they carried that out. Yes. Do I think they believe they chose to believe in the spies, or they weren't maiminim? Right. They either weren't maminim, or they were just persuaded by the spies. I don't think it's two separate things. I think it's the exact same thing. It's the exact same thing. The very fact that they allowed themselves to be persuaded by the Meraglim means that their Amunah was none of the highest level. All right. Whereas those who were not persuaded, they listened to Kalev and Yeshua. All right, weren't many. Because, you know, you had Moshe, and you had, I guess you'd say there are some, less than, only those between 20 and 60 died. So you had this game, but the Sanhedrin didn't follow the Meraglim. So you had a very small group. Most of them, in fact, were very heavily influenced by the Meraglim. Yes. Oh, not at all. Absolutely not. The notion that you could talk people into anything was proved by the Nazis and is being proved again today with the Arabs. You can talk people who would never think for a moment that they should kill themselves or kill other people, innocent people, in a day you could transform them. All right, that's what Hitler did, and that's what's done today. You know, you have people, like you take the Arab terrorists from September 11th. They weren't poor people. Most of them were college educated, middle class to upper middle class. All right? They were not necessarily raised with this, but as, you know, young adults, they were.
They didn't see the power of what people thought.
Ah, you mean because, yeah, but you could ask the same thing about the Egel Azov. Right. Yes, then Egel Azov. The fact is, they were always told they would conquer the land. All right? And they had part of it is the slave mentality they could not overcome. Right? Yeah, well, you make your choices in life. Here, one of the most astounding psukim of the Torah we gloss over. Harosh sent the Jews out. Even though it was the near route, via Maris, up the coast of Sinai, through El Arish, the short route they could have taken, could have been in Eretz Yisrael 3 days, all right? Instead they went southerly to Yamsuf. Ki Amar Elohim, because God said, Pen Yinachema Amir Asam Milchama V'Shavu Mitzrayma, that the people will become disheartened when they see a battle ahead of them, they'll go back to Egypt. It's the same question. They just saw all the Egyptians die. The first ones out of Makas Bechoros. All were afflicted in the last half year with a variety of strange magical plagues. They saw the Yad Hashem, Yod Chazak Azor Netuya. So why would they be afraid? You should think that, God, wherever you take us, and afraid of war. Are you kidding? Hashem Yilochem Lochem, Atem Tacharishun. People are not like that. They would have been broken by it. Before Moshe, had they seen the approaching Plishtim, they would have been broken, and they would just have run without even hearing Moshe's drasha. They leave, you know, before Musa. They want to hear the drasha that Shabbos. They're just out the door already, and packed and gone. That's the fragile psyche. that Moshe was dealing with that had to be shaped into a nation. Yes. Very damaged. Couldn't stand on their own. The fact is, indeed, they ask another question. When Sagad didn't want to take them that way, because Barasa Milchama, they'll freak out. Well, that happened already, Yamsuf. What happened when they saw the Egyptians coming? They also freaked out. By Yiluma, oh, petrified. By Yitzchakuv and Esau Hashem, there's some crying out. So, why couldn't they cry out and be petrified? We'll push them. Go the land route. You went at the Suez Canal. Egypt and Sinai are linked. Land link. They're gonna cry anyway, scream anyway, they're gonna be terrified anyway, take the short route. No. That's not the plan. Because you have to be built up. You can't do it. The fact is, if that had happened, you know, Uli Tzur, and they'd enter Eretz Yisrael, they wouldn't last there. They would not last. They would not last. That's correct. Have to. I mean, it's the Ratzon Hashem. Have to do it. One other point I wanted to raise, just briefly, the way of conclusion, I mentioned one of the egos of Rav Kook. It's actually letter 76. Rav Kook says that, Rav Kook wrote that how do we undo in our day the chait of the Meraglim? By praising Eretz Yisrael. Their sin was to criticize, disparage Eretz Yisrael, so our penance, the atonement for that sin, is to praise Eretz Yisrael. And he said, Golos, he wrote this now approaching maybe 90 years ago, Golos lingers, the exile lingers because the Jewish people across the world are hesitant to inform the world of the value and the worth of Eretz Yisrael to us. We're silent. We're reticent to speak in those terms. We don't speak of We don't speak of its majesty, of its glory, of its holiness, of its great honor, its great worth. We don't speak of that. If we don't speak of that, then we can't rectify the sin of the Meraglim, and we're not zocha to maintain it either. That's also part of Omad Vayamodev Eretz, that God stood Kivyacho and measured out the land, and gave the land which is chaviv to him, to the people who are chavivim to him, and we said there's no land in the world that's more Reuya, Reynosha, Reyesrael, or Eretz Yisrael. No land more worthy of the people than the land. The world is very unaccustomed, and I think Jews are unaccustomed, speaking of that dimension of a land that's suited to a people. The people usually take on the characteristics of the land, right? The Jewish people are different in that sense. The land and the people are inseparable, because we both share, in a sense, the same Avodah Hashem. The land of Israel is a testament to the service of God, the entire Shemayim Tishtemayim, and the Jewish people are that same testament. But if only we recognize what's appropriate and the uniqueness of Eretz Yisrael, these are the other lands and certainly special character to the Jewish people, then we undo the chait of the Meraglim and we zocha harichus yamnu v'shonim in the land of Israel and ultimately restoration of Malchus Beis David from here and on. Yes?
You criticize the political situation.
The government. I'm speaking about the land and the people of the land. Government. Who knows? You're trying to say, what if it's the government of the Meraglim? How we can't say. Not yet, anyway. Okay, thank you.